The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
This is Lydia.
And I'm Brent.
And today we bring to you... Brent, Lydia Talks Diamond!
Yay! Yeah, and this is our 24th episode where we talk about Starman issue number 22.
22. Wow, we've been talking... Starman for 22 issues and like doing this podcast for 24.
Yes.
24 weeks. Met up 24 times. That's a day!
We've been talking once this episode goes out, maybe even before it goes out, since most of our episodes like an hour and 10, 15 minutes. Mm. Yeah, we have been talking Spider-Man for... Spider-Man! Blah! Talking Starman! Not Spider-Man. That'll be the next one. Starman for over a day. That's so weird.
I know. We took like over a year to do it. Did we? I can't remember when we started.
We started in May. I know this because I recently, for folks listening through this, you're either listening through this on the Comics League International podcast feed, or you're listening to it. I started it recently, the Brent and Lydia Talk Starman podcast feed, and when I made that happen and pulled all these episodes into their own individual show, I saw that our first episode got posted. I think it was like May 16th.
Okay.
Of last year.
Cool.
Yeah.
Lots has happened.
I know.
Yeah. But it's been fun and I'm still enjoying
stuff. You almost make it sound like fun. It's been fun. It's been fun.
No, I'm actually excited. That was my excited fun.
I'm glad.
It's been fun. It's been so fun.
I am not holding her hostage. She is here of her own free will, I promise.
I am. All right. So, Starman issue 22 was published in September of 96. And so, we used this site called onthisday.com to look at the events that transpired on those days, and unfortunately for me, when I looked at the list, none of the things in Japanese, there's this saying pinto konai, and it just means like things that strike you, like oh yeah, that's it, you know, none of them came to my pin.
Oh no!
That's weird. But you know, honorable mention, and I don't even know whether that's a nice way to put it, because people died here, and September 7th, there was this rap artist. Brent, how do you say his name?
Tupac Shakur,
he got shot, and apparently it was a huge thing in the States, right?
Yeah, it was pretty big, and still a lot of people talk about. I was not a fan of rap and hip hop at that time, so I can't really, you know, espouse cleverly about why he was important. But I know that he was a very popular figure, and that when he was killed, it caused a lot of upset people, and I remember slightly hearing about there being a thing of it being an incident of, since it happened in public, I think in Vegas, of people saying like, I can't believe the killer was never caught, but since, you know, that wasn't my preferred style of music, I gotta say I didn't really pay too much attention.
Okay. I see. Well, because I wasn't there, and I really, even now, I'm very removed from this his genre of music. I've actually never heard of him. Yes, but now I'm actually pulling him up on Wikipedia, and his stage name is Tupac, right? And I might have seen this somewhere before. It's just, you know, popular culture and stuff like that. But I never knew that he was short or anything. So, but what is a drive-by shooting? I'm sorry, because I really don't know anything about
gunfire. Singapore. It's basically it's you know, I hate to sound like I'm condescending or something, but it is where the car just drives by, and the people in the car just open fire, you know.
Okay.
So when the shooting happens, whoever's doing the shooting, they don't get out of the car. They're in the car to take out whoever it is.
And they're not like hitmen or anything. They're just doing it.
I mean, that's one of the crime arguments. Is it, you know, how focused is it? How random is it? You know,
I see.
So there's some people say that the very nature of a drive-by, in that it's kind of fast, and, you know, I mean, the image is that the car may not even stop.
Okay.
Is that there is just a high degree of just shooting anyone in a general vicinity. Whether or not people doing it would consider themselves hitmen is, you know, probably up for argument, and I'm not in a position to really talk
about. Yeah, I understand. I see. Question, though.
Yo.
Since you were a kid, you know, when you started to know about the world, what was gun violence? Was this whole, like, oh, I live in a country with shootings, this thing, was it already in your head?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say when it became a part of how I associated with America. You know, or
right, because you're in it. Yeah.
I guess when I, like, for example, there was even a shooting my freshman year of high school at the school I was at.
Oh, okay.
And it happened basically within 20, 50 feet of the classroom I was in.
Okay. Wow.
And so that was a very intense thing.
Okay. And I ask this because, you know, for someone like me, very sheltered, living in a very, very strange country. I say strange because a lot of people find Singapore very protective, I guess, might be the word. It's a what's that word where the government acts as your parent? I just can't remember the term for it.
I'd be grabbing at straws.
Yeah. So, anyways, the government is very strict, thus the idea that things like shootings, you know, now that I'm reading the Wikipedia for Tupac Shakur, he was, you know, drive-by shooting, and I had to ask Brent what it was. It just makes me realize, you know, my childhood was very, very safe, and in terms of violence like that. And when I watched movies, you know, we have American movies in Singapore. It's not like North Korea or anything. I always thought that was a fictionalized America, because I was a kid, so I thought that everything that happened in Hollywood happened in Hollywood. It was just, you know, I could not wrap my head around the idea that things like that could actually happen in real life, because it did not happen where I was from. Mm-hmm. And it was only until I was maybe, I can't remember, I might have already been a teenager, I just realized that these things are real, and that was quite like, whoa, I don't want to go to America. Yeah, I don't know. But honestly, it does scare me, the idea of, I can't imagine being living in a country, I mean, no offense, but living in a country where, like, you know, it's so close by. And interestingly, when you, because we are doing Starman, and there's no, I don't feel like, well, Starman is one of those things where, you know, bad influences for kids, because I guess it's because it's so unreal.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's good. This is still within safe perimeters, but when it comes to things like, you know, when I watch certain movies and I'm like, is this real? Like, if this has to be real, like, and it scares me. That scares me because I wish it didn't happen. I wish the world wasn't like this, but it is. It still is. And I don't know. Maybe we do need superheroes in the world.
I mean, I think we need something that kind of shows us that there's, I don't know, another way. I think when superheroes are at their best, they are, I mean, there's definitely escapism in there. But I think when they do triumph, it's when they kind of, you know, promote, it's, as a kid, you think Batman's really cool. Because he's a ninja and he goes around and he punches people in the face and he's tough. But I think the older I get, the more, like, if I'm going to go to the Batman Superman dynamic, which, since we're talking about Starman, a DC character, it feels you know, like that's the metaphor I should use. Or I feel myself more drawn to Superman. You know, not because of the powers necessarily, but because even though he has that power, he tempers it greatly with spirit. You know, and not to make this an overly political episode, but I mean, we're certainly seeing in my country, I think we're seeing the overreach of power and lack of humanity. Going on as we speak. And, you know, whether or not Batman would be comfortable with such a thing, it really depends on who the current writer would be. The Batman from the most recent DC movie might be okay with what's happening in America right now. But, Superman, you know, the one who is an immigrant from a foreign land to Earth, would definitely be against the overreach and the hate that the current American administration is promoting.
I see. Interesting. I have to read Superman someday, I think.
There's definitely some great stuff, but there's a lot of, you know, not so exciting.
Really?
Well, yeah, because I mean, in a way, what makes Starman great is he has limits, right?
Yes.
I mean, how many times have we just gone on about how normal Jack seems?
Yeah.
Like just a guy with a gun in the right situation can make a compelling villain for Starman. Mm. With Superman, because of his great power, it can sometimes be hard for writers to think of compelling adventures for him because, well, he's Superman. Mm-mm. What are you gonna do? You're gonna shoot Superman with a gun?
That's true. And I didn't think of that, you know. I always thought he had some kind of limitation, that thing. Kryptonite.
But then again, if kryptonite's in every single issue, it gets done.
Ah, like, okay, I see what you mean.
Like I don't think at this point there have been any type of, oh no, my cosmic rod is losing power. But
yeah. But if you thought about it, if you took that out of context, never mind. Okay, continue.
Moving along. Oh, Lydia, your mind's always in the gutter when it comes to my glowing staff.
When it comes to Jack's glowing staff. Okay, we should shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up about this and move on.
So, issue 22. I'm just gonna truncate that conversation and go right into issue number 22. We're continuing the Sand and Stars. This is part 3 of 4. Here is your synopsis. Thank you. We start on Wesley, who is on the phone, and he's trying to find out if anyone knows where Jack is. He's calling the person who is secretly his main suspect for the locations of Jack. Wesley uses his old mannishness to get invited along to the airship test flight, which he believes has some type of key for where Jack is. He and Diane wonder if times have changed since they were heroes in their own right. Then we cut to the airship, and boy, do the bad guys look sure of themselves. Little do they know that Wesley Dodds is on the prowl, or whatever prowling you can do with a cane. As Wesley Dodds starts closing in on the secrets of the bad guys, he has his doubt of courage and his age and ability, and he flashes back to yesteryear, where a Ted Knight was in a similar situation. Now, at that time, Wesley was in his prime, and so was Diane, that foxy mama. And they go through and recount the tale of how... I'm getting my names confused. Of how Wesley saves Ted from the gambler. And, you know, friendship and stuff. And that's when he realizes he has to take action. Old man action, old man action. And that's what happens.
Yay! All right. So... I quite liked this cover.
Oh, me too.
Okay. Yes, I like the cover. I don't know why exactly, but it felt a lot more relatable, I guess, to the story. Mm-hmm. And it just was a lot simpler, and it just spoke about the relationship between these two guys, like they are together on this. I don't know why I had that feeling, like, you know how sometimes they put the enemies on the cover as well, but this didn't feel like they were enemies because they were looking at each other. Maybe I don't know. Your take, Brent?
No, I'm the same way. I mean, because I think we both, you know, we didn't feel last issue's cover was the strongest, but this one, I mean, it's really striking. Everything from just the composition of it with the two men, Jack and Wesley, looking slightly past each other or slightly out towards the viewer, the way the gas mask and hat are just really centrally placed with that sheet of yellow really draws your eyes to it, and that it is their iconic weaponry, costumes, kind of jumbled together. Really, really just fit. So this is just such a great cover.
Yeah, I liked it. I love how the cosmic rod is silver here, because I've only ever seen it yellow. Silver gray, gunmetal gray.
Yep, yeah.
And I don't know, is it really yellow or is it really gray? You know, it's like that dress thing.
It's purple! Purple!
Yeah. So, I like your analysis of the cover. I liked it. Yeah, the jumble of things was very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And their look, their far away, turn, look.
I like how they're not necessarily looking at us. They're looking at something just slightly over our heads. They're looking at something grander.
Yeah. And they're looking in the same direction.
Maybe they're looking at an airship?
Oh, maybe. And I really love how it's drawn because of the way their faces are angled. You know, Jax's face towards the diagonal right of page, and Wesley is mirroring him. So Jack's eyes kind of have to like lift upwards and slant to the side. That's a nice touch. I mean, to have him look that way, to look up at the same spot as Wesley is, except because of the way his face is drawn, it's like he had to put in that
little
effort.
Extra effort.
I like that.
And just one more thing from me. My final little point would be, I like how if like us, you've spent a lot of time talking about these Starman comics and covers, then if you look for it, you can tell that this isn't Ted. That Wesley and Jack, they don't look like, and especially on the covers, we've noticed in the past that there is resemblance in those characters that is lacking here. So it's nice to see that there is thought being put into making sure that Wesley looks like an individual, not just, and here's a generic old white guy.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of that. Nice point. Okay. All right. Shall we open the cover?
Let's do it.
All right, page one. Okay, we have Wesley on the phone, like you said. He's at home, and he's talking to, what's his name?
Gale,
that's right. I keep forgetting his name.
Gale is somehow, you know, I think one of the reasons we keep forgetting Gale is that so far, he's been kind of a forgettable villain.
Okay. That's true, that's true. I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah.
Yes. A forgettable villain. He is the guy who built the airship with the guy, Blaine, who died in Wesley's apartment block, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Got it. Let's go.
Yep. Nice pink.
Yes. It's a rose. Yeah. It's a rose color. Would you say it's rose? The
it's
color.
Rose. Yeah.
The pink is called rose. Mm. And is it used to, I'm not sure what the intended effect is, but I'm just guessing it's sunset or something. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, you know, It could be sunset, although they say it's taking place later today in 4 hours, so maybe it's sunrise? It could be sunrise. In a way, I just kept thinking of submarines.
Submarines?
Yeah, I kept thinking of submarines and how in submarine movies, when things are that shade of red in the movies, It usually means something bad is happening. And this just could be me just free associating, but that's what I think. I think you might be more correct that it's supposed to show that it's really early in the morning. But my mind just said, like, ooh, it's red because they feel they're in danger.
I see. Well, you know, I think there are many different interpretations of it. And
there can be only one.
No, I think the writers or the artists, they intended for us to take it in all these different ways. Mm-hmm. I it could just be everything might be right. Right?
Ooh. Yes. So,
that's the nice thing about comics, I think. Well, literature.
Yeah.
Of any kind. Yeah. Open to interpretation.
Yeah. If you can have a reasoning behind your particular interpretation of it, can someone really say you're wrong just because?
No, they can't. Yeah. So
basically what we learn from the conversation on the next two, maybe three pages, is that Gale is saying that we don't know where anyone is. And Wes is like, oh, well, that's a shame because we can't find them. Hey, by the way, can we come see your airship? When's that again? And Gale's all like, yeah, sure.
And you know something's up because we know that in the previous issue, Jack, he ninjaed into Gale's factory, a base, a facility, or whatever you call it, and he was caught.
Yes.
So we know that Gale's lying.
Yes.
And we are wondering whether Wesley and Diane are walking to a trap. Dun, dun, dun! But we don't know yet.
No. Now, what I really like about these pages are just the amount of emotion that Harris, our penciler, is displaying between, you know, Diane and Wesley. There's no doubt on these first two pages of the comic that they are worried, and there's a sense of pain in it. And yet at the same time, you know, we get so much through body posturing and things like that about the closeness and warmth of their relationship. And I really like all that subtext to the art.
I kind of took it for granted because, you know, we've known about their very established relationship. But thanks for pointing it out. Yeah. It's the last bit where Wesley and Diane, they reach for each other's hands. You know, Wesley does have lines in this. He says, I love you, Diane. I'm just wondering if you took away that speech bubble. I'm covering it with my thumb. Just looking, like, seeing it. I think that would have spoken volumes as well without the speech bubble.
I think so.
Yeah, I like how it was one, like, you know, they're reaching for their hands and then they have their hands in each other's. That was really nice.
Yeah.
Good art.
Yes. No, I agree. It almost doesn't even need that speech bubble. I mean, there's no problem with it being there, of course, but...
Okay, moving on.
And on the next page, we get a little bit of a splash, and we get our credit box saying that this is Sand and Stars Part 3 with James Robinson, writer, Tony Harris, penciler on pages 1 through 9, 21 through 22, Wade Von Grobiger, inker on those same pages. And then joining this team for this issue is Guy Davis, who's doing pencils and inks for pages 10 through 20. And we have new colorists this time. Trish Mulvihill and David... I can't tell if this is Hornung or Hornling. I can't quite tell, honestly. And that's due to Oakley NJQ letters. Why did you make it hard to read if this is Hornung or Hornung? Chuck Kim, assistant editor. Archie Goodwin, editor. And, of course, Jack Knight, created by James Robinson and Tony Harris.
Alright. Mm. Airship.
Airship.
I had... Before this, this bit, I did not think an airship would look like this. honestly, and I'm probably going to sound very stupid, I thought it was a hot air balloon. I am wrong. I've been wrong.
Yes.
It's more of like a flying submarine, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, like the Hindenburg, or like on Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade when they're flying, would that be a Zeppelin?
I see. Yeah. You know, I haven't really watched the Indiana Jones movies. It was just playing on TV and I was just, you know, kind of like sort of watching but not.
I think the first three are great. The last one, you know, is a movie.
Okay.
That exists.
I see.
Starman. Yeah. And this...
Starman didn't have a movie, did it? No movies yet?
No movies yet. There were talks of a movie a while ago, but I think they've been kind of put on permanent hold. Okay. And I'm just wondering if my birds are being loud enough so that everyone at home can hear them yell at me for not being right next to them and playing with them. I'm just wondering.
Okay, it's background. It's not noise, so it's just background sound. I'm just... I maybe some of you can hear my heater because it's rotating, so it's fine. You guys just have to like bear with it.
Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah. Starman is just a comic right now, I guess.
Yep. And probably always will be.
Okay, which is great. I mean, it's fine by me. Yeah. But can we talk a little bit of about this airship page?
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's like spread out, and I like the colors on this page. I haven't really noticed them until now. Mm. The airship, it's obviously it's very prominent because it spans two pages, but yes. the clouds behind it.
Those are very pretty.
I know. They don't look like, you know, the kind of clouds that you normally find in books. I don't know I don't know how to explain this, but you know how in geography we learn how to read maps, and then there are what are those called? Topographical maps where, you know, there's like a terrace kind of pattern, and then you can see how high an elevation is.
The
clouds contour look maps. Like that. Yes. The clouds look like those. With the the tessellation. I don't know whether that's the word. They don't look like clouds, but you know that they are clouds, and that's cool. I like the way it's being drawn here. Who drew it? Let's see. How do you know? Who is penciler? Does the penciler do these things?
I think it would be the penciler. It would. I think with this situation, it would either be the penciler, or it could even be an effect of the colorist.
Okay. Cool, though. Colorists or pencilers. I see. Okay. And they're a bit dreamy, the clouds. Yeah. And then, bam, you have, like, this futuristic airship. Yeah, and all the colors on the clothes of the people who are underneath.
Yeah, they do seem a bit more pastel. Is that the word I'm looking for? Than normal.
Yes, a little bit more subdued than, you know, Charity's house.
Part of me wonders if this change in colorists... I guess we'll have to wait for next issue. Has to deal with our kind of guest penciler.
Okay.
Because they really work in these colors, but they're not... Because they're not as dynamic. As or not dynamic, but not as like...
Vibrant?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess vibrant.
as Greg Wright, our normal colorist. They're not as vibrant as his colors. Mm. So it's a nice effect, but yeah, it doesn't. It makes the colors pop more. Doesn't make the blacks pop as much.
Yeah, agreed. Even the suits of the men, they are blacks, but they seem kind of like grayish blue. Bluish gray. A lot of like the highlights. I don't know if I'm using these terms right, but you know where the creases are. They are like blue.
Yeah,
the color choice was blue.
Yeah, and so. I would say that normally with most of the Starman issues, the colors have served to enhance the blackness all around.
Yeah.
Whereas this, my eye, now that I'm really thinking about it, isn't as drawn to the blackness as it is drawn away from it to the pools of color.
Yep.
But exactly. Since in this issue, Starman himself isn't as present in it, it also kind of works with the coloring representing that.
Mm-mm. Yep. In fact, I don't think Jack appears at all.
He's in one page.
He is?
Yes.
Okay.
Stay tuned. Dun dun dun.
Oh, yes, he is. He is. All right. Yeah, yeah. Starman does appear, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
He's in more pages.
He is. All right. Mm. So, anything else to talk about for these two pages? Where they meet the guy?
No, not really. We just get him going, and then we get a... For the next page, we get a nice little old Sandman sneaking through the offices.
Yep.
Getting to the door of Warren Gale, where people are conveniently giving away the fact that they're doing bad things.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, I thought they were all outside meeting people.
Yeah, yeah, it is. We get a very brief look of the guy with the cigar being like, where he's kind of saying goodbye to Wesley and maybe Diane when he seems to be heading out. But it is the sudden, how convenient that he went from outside to inside at the same time that Wesley was.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I thought the same. But, these airship exhibition things are actually very relatable for me because when I was living in Ota before this, we were famous for the Subaru factory. So we were allowed to go in on a day where they opened it up to, it's like their family day, and then there are planes in the grounds.
Huh.
Yeah, because Subaru used to manufacture planes before for the war, and some of them still stay there, and it looks a lot like that, like in the comic.
Neat.
Yeah. So, not an airship, though. I mean, they're on the ground. Yeah. But I would imagine, so I'm when I read this comic, I'm actually imagining myself like, okay, everybody's at the exhibition, and I'm creeping into the offices, and here I am overhearing a conversation that I shouldn't be listening in on. Yeah. So over here we see Sandman, Wesley. He knows that his life is in danger. I think he knows that I don't know if they plotted to lure him and Diane to the place, or he just is like, hey, we got lucky.
Well, I took it as they're not really even considering Wesley a threat one way or the other. It's, because I took the, he's here anyway, he invited himself, so I agreed to his coming, let him see the airship go down. He'll know something is wrong because his young friend went missing, but he'll never know it was me. He'll die never knowing. And I took that as, you know, like, well, he's just an old guy. What's he going to do? Because he's already dismissed him as a threat, maybe somewhere on this this page or an earlier page.
Yeah.
And that, like, well, he'll just watch what happened, and he'll have his doubts, but he'll never know.
Yeah. Right.
What was my reading of it, like, so, yeah.
Okay, so he just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, they thought.
Yeah, or that he suspects anything, but, you know, suspicions and a 25 cents will get you a can of soda.
Yeah, we're going to kill you anyway, that kind of thing.
Or even just, like, not even bother to kill him. Just like, hey, you don't know. What do you can't prove anything, and you're old, so you'll die.
You're old. Yeah. You know, there's this repeated thing in Starman where the old people can't do anything, so we're just going to dismiss them. Because it happened with Ted and Dr. Phosphorus or something, right?
Yep.
Yep. So here, Sandman is probably going to save the day. I don't know. I hope he does. Okay, and then we see I'm onto that purple page next, where Wesley, he's like in this boiler room kind of place. Yeah,
boiler room printing factory type thing. Tony Harris does one of those panel layouts that I really like, where the background is all the same, but the figure in it is moving through the panels.
Nice, yes.
I like the silent page. I love the detail on the eyes of him being shocked.
I know, yes. It's the one, the rightmost panel, right, at the bottom?
Yes.
Right, yeah. And you can see that he's old. It's just amazing how just through the goggle part of the mask, you can see that he's an old person. And not only that purple one, the green one too, the one which shows his right eye.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So very nice art, very just not only the oldness, the expression in his eyes, the purple one. Yeah. And it's a very nice match with his monologue. He just talks about, you know, am I too old for this? Is my courage gone with my age and stuff like that? So it's very real, I guess, if you put yourself in those shoes when, you know, everybody is ageist.
Now the only thing about these two pages, the two last purple pages, is it almost feels like the perspective is different than it should be. Or, well, because we have, it looks like, I'm going to get way too nitty gritty on this, just bear with me. Okay. It looks like Wesley is walking with a wall on his right side. He looks around that wall down a passageway, sees Jack, and then kind of backs up, but now the wall is on his left side. It looks like the camera angle did something weird, or like the panel maybe got flipped or something. It looks like he walked past the hall as opposed to just ducking back. There's something weird about that transition to me.
Oh, okay. I get what you mean. I never noticed it, but now that you talk about it, I have one explanation, which is it's not, you know, it's the other side of the wall. He just kind of ducked and went to the other side. Or, I don't know, he's just wary because he's on one side of the wall, and then he just to the other side, and then he looks back where he came from, and he's like, okay, nobody saw me, right?
Yeah.
You
know, yes. Oh, I was going to say, I'll go with it, yeah.
Okay. I mean, he's not as nimble as before, and he's like, he's constantly having to double check. I don't know, this is just all off the top of my head.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, regardless, this certainly isn't something that's like going to prevent my enjoyment of the issue, but it was something I noticed.
Interesting. Cool thing that you noticed it, though, because it totally did not strike me at all. Okay. We go to this page. When I flipped it, I was amazed
at
just how art can tell you that, hey, this is a flashback.
Yes, yes.
You know, it wasn't even just it wasn't the colors, it was also the drawing, the lines and everything. It just seemed a little fuzzier, and it's very strange, but it's very awesome. So yeah,
well, and you know, this change of page, you know, because we got the page before, we got Sandman kind of reflecting on, is he afraid, is he too old, and then we change the page and we get the sudden art style change, and this is Guy Davis.
Okay.
So it's a completely different artist, and he does his own pencils and inks. And what's really fun about this is, you know, I think I've talked a little bit about Sandman being in the Sandman Mystery Theater. And although it did have kind of a rotating art team for a while, the most associated artist with the Sandman Mystery Theater was Guy Davis. And this was set, you know, in this time period. So the kind of late 30s or early 40s. So it's just really fun for me to kind of see this art not only reflecting this time period, but being the artist who's most associated with Sandman at this time.
Oh, cool. Nice association. So they probably brought him on board to do this part.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Very meta.
Yes.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, we see a young version of Diane as well. Mm. I was very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know, I just, when I saw her in these pictures, I was like, oh, she aged very beautifully. So, we see Wesley on the phone with Ted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're talking about Ted's going where again?
Ted's coming to New York because he's working on a case that I thought I'd possibly drop by and say hello to you and Diane.
First establish the friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And then Starman, there's this bit that Wesley calls the police, right?
Yes.
What for again?
Well, because they kind of set up the idea in a way that this is very much a parallel of the situation that Jack is currently in. Ted kind of doing the hill, like, oh, I'm going to go do something, and then I'm going to meet up with you that evening. And then we get, you know, the page flip, and we got Wesley saying, Ted said he'd call last night, he didn't, now it's well into the following evening and still no word. So it's just kind of Wesley having that suspicion, that hunch, that the reason that Ted hasn't contacted was that something happened. So, and because he has, I guess, knowledge that, or it doesn't really even seem like it's a secret, I think, that Inspector Bailey, who we've heard about in the Starman in earlier issues, is kind of one of Ted Knight Starman's contacts on the police force. So it's basically just Wesley calling him up and be like, by the way, I'm Sandman, I'm a superhero. do you know why Starman might be here in New York? And just kind of trying to get the investigation started that way so we can find where Ted is.
Yeah. I see. Thank you for explaining that very nicely.
Mm.
Well, so you guys get it, right?
in a way, I don't want to start poo-pooing on the issue, but in a way, this almost falls right in the line with my main trouble.
Okay.
With this arc.
Really? Okay. Go on.
Is that there's so much effort being put into setting up the mystery that it almost takes away from the events. Because, here we have just the whole plot is like... It doesn't feel... It feels like if you're watching a mystery movie on fast forward, so you're getting all these chunks and these huge things and dum 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 dum. But there's not really. I mean, this entire mystery here is really crammed into 10 pages of comic, and so there's never really any room for it to breathe. It's just like we're all told, here's what's going on. But it doesn't feel as satisfying because it just feels... Everything feels over-expositioned and forced.
I see. Huh. Okay.
Although, I guess, to be fair, I could look at it as an idea of... If I just look at this in a way as a preview... Of like, hey, do you like this style of writing? Do you like this style of art? If so, then you'll love Sandman Mystery Theater.
I see.
Of kind of like, trying to get more readers over to that comic. I don't know.
I see. I'm not as sensitive as you, so I didn't... honestly, yeah, I didn't pick up on all these things. But now that you mention it, it's true because it's already part three of this Sand and Stars, this little story bit. And we're still very, we are still fed with a lot of backstory, and the outside mission isn't really progressing, even though we are at number three. And it's not even one of those, because the next issue is part four, so it's not even a huge, what do you call it, like we aren't swept up in the wave for us to be brought down in four, like the previous one where Jack was put in that maze by Nash. We there was a lot of action in that one, but this is just kind of like a slow burn and I don't really know where it's going. So yeah, I see where you're coming from, definitely. Yeah. Shall we just kind of like blaze through the flashback? I don't know.
Because I mean, it's beautiful art. I really like Guy Davis's art. I like how scratchy it is. I like how it very much looks. This might be a weird thing to say. Mm. It very much looks like a person made this.
Oh, what do you mean?
It's. It very much looks like a drawing. Like, you can kind of see the ink on the page. You can see the lines. There's not an attempt to make it photorealistic or anything like that.
I see. Yes. You're
very aware that everything on this is a drawing.
Yes.
But in a wonderful way.
Yes. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
And I think the first few times I saw Guy Davis's art, it kind of shook me because, I was younger and I was used to the really slick, really impressive, pretty art. Like, like Jim Lee and really crazy good stuff. And this is just kind of muddy. And why does it look so blah, blah, blah? But, I mean, now, like, this stuff to me is, it's just amazing.
Yeah, very classic. I used to own comics given to me by a god-grandmother. God-grandmother, it belonged to her kids who are in their... They must be in their 50s by now. So I acquired them when I was in primary school service. We're talking about books from the 1940s. 70s.
Mm-hmm-hmm.
And they looked like this. the publishing, the paper, and like, I literally had them in my hands, and they looked like this. Like the colors and the kind of like, it's like the marks weren't erased out nicely, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I also that I had that throwback to the past kind of thing when I read these. Okay.
Jumping through.
Yes.
So how should we go? Should we just kind of jump to the gambler, or because we have Wesley and Diane, we get to see their dynamic.
Let's talk a little bit about Wesley and Diane then. We see that Diane's also doing her own thing. Again, nice parallel.
Yep.
I like how she talks to the women and the unsuspecting, you know, it's always these things, like Peggy Carter and stuff like that, where you kind of like do your espionage, but nobody knows that you are the spy because you're a woman.
Yeah.
So she does it, and she feeds that information to Wesley, I guess. Yes, she does. Who goes on to save Ted, who is held captive by what's his name?
The Gambler.
That's right, the Gambler. And when they said like, he's in this place that looks like an old casino and stuff like that, then I immediately thought of the last issue where we had Ted on the roulette.
Yes, thing
in the car. Yeah, so that was the immediate association. So I think that was actually a nice tie-in.
It really was
this issue. Yeah, they foreshadowed. So. The gambler has held Ted captive in his lair, and Wesley is here to take him down alone. Yes.
Yep. And, you know, this, I hate to keep going back to how good the art looks, but I really do like, right now I'm looking at the action sequence page where, Wesley is untying Ted and they're both, you know, punching folk. I really like how Ted's costume, just how it looks on the body. Like, it doesn't look like spandex in a way. It almost looks like, old-fashioned workout clothes. I'd almost think that with this art style, something like a superhero costume would look silly, but it still just really works on the page.
Yeah, agreed. All right.
And so we have fisticuffs going on.
Yes. I was wondering about something throughout the whole two pages, which is when Wesley used the gas, why didn't Ted get affected?
Because he's in the corner. Yeah.
I see. So he didn't have like buds up his nose or anything. He was just like in the corner. Okay, he just managed to avoid the gas.
You know, I'm going to go with that. That's what I'm going to go with, cuz whenever we see Ted fighting, the visuals is that the gas isn't as close to Ted. So we can just kind of explain it away by saying, like, oh, well, it's a type of gas that it has to have, like, a very concentrated blast for it to take any real effect other than just kind of smelling funky. Yeah, that works. Yeah.
Okay. I can accept that. All right, so they fight, basically, and somehow the gambler gets his hands on Wesley. And he uses Wesley to threaten Ted. You know, it's a classic villain underhand move where he's like, if you move or if you attack me, I'm going to kill your friend. And here's this expensive thing. I didn't really get it, why he chose that. Like, I know it was a priceless thing of beauty, but would Starman care so much about that thing? What is it called anyway?
They they might have named it once, but they just kept on referring to it as the statue. I mean, it's basically, it's the MacGuffin they're looking for.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So, statue, yeah, why?
Yeah.
It was a little bit, don't you think sometimes, I mean, these parts of the story can get a little bit weak?
No, I felt exactly that same way, where it's like, you can have one or the other, and then he chooses Sandman, of course, but
yeah.
And they kind of have, my God, you smashed that sculpture that was priceless because, you know, it's priceless. Yeah. And then there's all like, oh, it was worthless. It was actually a fake. Good legit. Yeah. And I mean, that was kind of a weak way. And you're like, well, I mean, no, but totally, even if it was real, I would have saved you because, you know, we're friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Friends. So it was this great sequence of them working together, but then it almost undercuts itself out by saying, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it would have saved you regardless, but boy, knowing you was a piece of garbage made it a lot easier.
Yeah. I know, right? It's exactly how you... Yes, exactly. It's like exactly how you said it. Yeah. I mean, I love James Robinson. Yeah, I think he's a genius.
Yeah.
But this bit, it wasn't as dramatic as I wish it would have been, but then again, this is a flashback, this is not the main story, and to have to condense so much drama and motivation into a flashback, I think it was okay. Well, you know, out of five.
Yeah, I think in a way, I mean, this flashback sequence, other than that little ending segment, is great in and of itself. I think one of my overall problems with it is that it is serving two masters in this story. Because Wesley's dialogue or thoughts before we cut into this is him just, you know, contemplating on, is he too old? Is he afraid? Is he this? And then we get the mystery and how things used to happen, but the ultimate takeaway for the end of this thing is that, you know, friendship between him and Starman won out.
Yes.
So his kind of courage didn't really play as much a factor in this scene, even though what set up the scene was him reminiscing about the days when he had more courage. I get, maybe I'm thinking of it too simplistically, but it does serve as like the motivating factor to him, like, no, I will do this. I will do this deed. Where it kind of seems like, well, but, you know, this hot kind of whole thing of, you, on the other hand, are my friend. And if we think about issue one of this arc, the first issue of this arc, where Ted was saying, like, you know, to be honest, I never really felt close to Wesley. Kind of, it's that serving two masters of, is this supposed to illustrate the closeness that there was, in fact, a bond between Sandman and Starman that's kind of being passed down between father and son? Is this supposed to illustrate that Starman once did and still does have courage despite his age? So it just kind of feels like the point of that excerpt is just a little too muddled.
Yeah, agree. Too many, like what you said, what was it? Too many masters at one time.
Yeah.
Serving too many masters at one time. Yeah. Trying to achieve too much.
Yeah.
But it ends here, so we are brought back, right? To current day, what do you call it?
Present day?
Present day, thank you. Present day, and Wesley is still in that corner, having all his doubts. But he says something like, if this must be the last thing I do, like, oh man, is he gonna die? I was thinking, oh no, he's gonna die. And then I thought, Maybe not, because this comic is Starman, and you can't really have Starman, Sandman dying in Starman. That's how I reasoned it, so don't spoil it for me. Yeah.
Brent checks the levels of the volume just because he doesn't want to say anything one way or the other, because he does remember the ultimate fate of Sandman in this arc.
Really? Oh, man, okay.
I'm not saying one way or the other. One way or the other, I am not saying.
Okay. Fine. Until the next issue.
Yes.
So it's to be continued.
Bum, bum, bum. To be concluded.
Oh, to be concluded. Ooh. Right. But, you know, can I just say...
Please.
Thank you. That this is not my favorite arc so far. Like, it might even... I can't really remember... I mean, it's been 22 issues, but I like the stuff with Shade because I like him. I like it when there are so many different characters doing things at one time. I know not everyone likes that, but, you know, having to follow different threads, I really like that. Like, in all the movies or the books that I like to read. I like to enjoy. So, having just Wesley and Jack and one villain, it just doesn't really entice me the same way as, like, you know, the previous ones where you had all the things happening. Do you remember the one with all the villains?
Oh, yes.
Right? The lineup and stuff?
Yeah, and so the multiple plot threads going through it.
Yes. The layers. I think layers are very important, where there's more than one mystery for the reader to solve.
Yeah. I think my reasoning is slightly different than yours, but I think my ultimate opinion is rather the same. Because, you know, I definitely agree with everything you said about the layers and how that's really one of the attractive points of this series. I do kind of step away and say, like, well, in a way, one of the problems of this particular arc so far has that it just kind of feels like, I don't know, like not as much has been happening, in a way that our heroes are all kind of passive. Like, oh, hey, I'm, you know, here, and something happened next to me, so I'll go look at it. Wow, that was bad. I wonder where this other thing happened. I'll go to that other guy's house, and hey, look, something happened. Man, I'm glad I saw both of those two things. There's a third place I can go. Whoa, look, something else is happening. And it just, it feels like they're, it really does feel, rather than them taking actions and the story being driven by the actions that the heroes are taken, it feels like they're passengers on it, and they're just kind of wandering into a series of events that the hero's involvement has no effect on.
Yeah, I agree. It's like walking into it.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, someone dies. You know, it's and someone dies when two superheroes are in the building.
Yes.
Right? It's too much.
And because they're not active players in it, we keep on having to get these long points where everything is explained to our heroes.
Yeah.
So not only are they being passive, but everything is driven by exposition rather than action. So just, you know, it feels like, again, Robinson, who's great at character and great at dialogue and great at the little moments, is really struggling to write a compelling mystery here. And it's got great moments and great elements in it, but overall, I'm just not as wowed by the story.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
All right, but we'll find out what happens in the next issue.
Yeah, so. Yeah, the concluding issue. And again, just to put it out there, I know I've said this at the end of the last few episodes, a bad issue of Starman is still overall a pretty good issue for pretty good issue of a comic book.
Yeah. Well, I haven't read a lot of comic books, so I'll take your word.
Oh, trust me, I can give you some much worse comic books to read.
it's okay. I don't need.
Where can they find you on the internet, Lydia?
Please visit me on Twitter. My username is Quek Channel, Q-U-E-K Channel. You can find me also on YouTube and Instagram. And I'm back at Snapchat, so you can find me on Snapchat as well. How about you, Brent?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour. You can find my main writing and blog page, deadlytroubadour.com. You can go to Facebook and find me, my Brent Thomas author page. You know, I'm all over the place. There's, if you're enjoying the show, enjoying the other things I do, then please visit my Patreon and feel free to put a little tip in the jar there, and that's patreon.com/Brent Thomas. Brent and Lydia Talk Starman is on iTunes. Hopefully you're subscribed to that. Please take a moment and just rate and review the show. It is very, very helpful. Right now I'm pretty sure that we have I've only made this show last week. There are a few subscribers to it, but unfortunately, we do not have any reviews yet. I haven't even reviewed the show, and that's a bad sign. But you know, take a moment and review it, please. We need it.
Yes, please help us improve.
Yes.
All right. So, Starman is 100-ish issues long, right?
Starman the series proper is 80 issues.
Oh, 80. Okay.
But seeing as how this podcast, we're not just doing the Starman issues, we're doing the annuals and the little mini series that branch out of it. So, if we do everything in our schedule, then this podcast will end up being 111 episodes long.
Okay, so we are about a little bit over a fifth of the way in, right? And so we would really like it if you guys could leave a comment somewhere. I know,
yes.
Don't want to be like the same for all the 100 issues, 111 issues, right? I mean, not that we are like we super want to switch things up, but if we could hear what people feel about it.
Well, and you know, and plus, just I know for me, just I'd love to have just a little bit of feedback, little user interactions. It feels lonely all by myself in the web.
Yeah, same. Well, Brent, but we have each other.
Yay. And my birds are telling me I have them, so I should end the show.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye. See
you next time. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, because he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose. Let the children use it, let all the children boogie.